I'm Maria Dudzak, and this morning we are checking in with the Public Health Department to get some information with regards to vaccinations, also with norovirus and other things that might be out there and about to keep you informed and keep you healthy. Joining us this morning, we have Public Health Nurse Jennifer Bergen. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, happy to be here.
And maybe first talk out a little bit about public health. What is the Public Health Department and what services do you offer?
Yeah, so public health, we work for the Department of Health and Social Services. And really, public health is the safety net for Alaska, and we actually do a wide variety of things. So most of the time when people think of public health, they're thinking of that's the lady that gives me the shots. But really, those are our individual services, and we like to focus more on community and systems level work. So we do a lot of education, a lot of policies, and just trying to keep the community as a whole healthy.
And is it like a sliding scale payment there?
Yeah, so we do a sliding fee scale. So that means that anyone can be seen at public health. And we do take your income and how much that you make. And we go off of that for discounts. We also accept Medicaid. So you could come into the health center and get services all the way up to a 100% discount.
And it is located a little off the road.
Yes. And they recently changed our address. So we are right behind Gateway Aquila in the Revilla, right behind Revilla High School on 605 Gateway Court. And that used to be Fifth Avenue.
Yeah, and you get it to it through on Fifth Avenue?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Right by Holy Name. So you turn on that road right by Holy Name.
And then There you go. Okay. So if you're not familiar with public health, that's kind of where it's at. Talk, I guess, a bit about maybe what is happening now. I guess, are there things going around, so to speak? It seems like a lot of people are getting bugs, different things. Is there anything prominent right now in the community?
So anytime during the tourist season, we do see an influx of infectious diseases, most commonly norovirus. And I know norovirus has been in the media a lot in the last month, coming from the cruise ships. We have been fortunate enough that those two cruise ships that have outbreaks that they reported did not dock in Ketchikan. Does not mean that we're not seeing norovirus, and we do see that every season, but most of the time it's not reported because people don't go to the doctor when they get the stomach flu. So it is here for sure. We do ask that you prevention for that would be mostly hand hygiene. It's pretty simple, and staying home when you're sick.
Yeah. Wash your hands.
Wash your hands and stay home.
And what are the symptoms of norovirus?
So norovirus is that stomach flu. So you're going to have severe abdominal cramping. You're going to have nausea, vomiting. Some people have high fevers. Some people don't. It just depends. And body aches.
And you're saying, though, the cruise ship outbreaks, those weren't brought to Ketchikan, but it's still here.
It's still here. That's correct.
Are there other things you're seeing besides norovirus?
So in Ketchikan, we do see a handful of foodborne illnesses sporadically. Nothing considered an outbreak. We definitely see things like cryptosporidium, which is a parasite. Anytime you have a community that drinks collected rainwater, they do a lot of fishing, you tend to see that. It can be an undercooked fish. And in your cisterns.
Okay.
So we do see that.
Are you seeing many things in, what shall I say, like restaurants or things?
So it's really hard to say where foodborne illness comes from. So no, we're not seeing it from any particular restaurant. Most of the time when people get foodborne illness, they don't report it. So it has to be pretty severe for them to go and seek medical help. So a lot of that is underreported.
Okay. And let's talk, I guess, I heard, mumps is
yeah.
going around?
Yeah. So mumps is not in Ketchikan. It's not. But there is an outbreak in Alaska, mostly in the Anchorage area. There has been 381 cases. And that is giant. That's a huge outbreak. It has started to creep down to the southeast. We have seen 5 confirmed cases in Juneau. Mm-hmm. So if no one knows, mumps is in that MMR vaccine. So it is recommended to get a third dose if you have not had an MMR vaccine in the last 5 years.
And what does that stand for?
So it stands for measles, mumps, and rubella. So it protects you against all three of those things.
And how often do you need to get a booster with that, or how often do you get that?
So previously, historically, they say no, that you get the two recommended doses at 1 and 5, and then you're good. But we are seeing decreased immunity in adults. We would know that by when women go in to have babies, they are frequently tested for rubella. So they test immunity, and we are seeing decreased immunity in your adulthood. So that is why we're recommending the third dose of the MMR, especially if you're planning on travel to those areas like Anchorage.
And it's just interesting to me because you just don't seem to see mumps anymore. At least I haven't. When I was a kid, it was common, but it just seems like everybody gets vaccinated for that, and you just don't see cases as much. Are people not getting vaccinated? Is that why it's getting around?
Right. That would be the reason that it is starting to be a problem all over the country, not just Alaska. So when you have a vaccine, you have a thing called a herd immunity, and that immunity has to be at a certain percentile, usually up in the 80s to 90% range. So now we're seeing more 50s to 60s% of people, total people vaccinated. So you're allowing that virus to find hosts, basically. It's allowed to spread and replicate and just, you know, infect more and more people.
And I remember very clearly when I got mumps as a kid, and it hurts a lot. Mm-hmm. You're very swollen in your cheeks, and you kind of look like a chipmunk.
You do, yep. It can be very, very painful. It also can cause some serious permanent disabilities. It can cause blindness and meningitis. It can cause encephalitis, which is swelling on the brain. And it actually can cause some sterility, some testicle swelling for men. So it has some severe side effects.
Okay. We mentioned mumps. Are there other things out there that are maybe not here, but I guess going around that people should be aware of?
So vaccine preventable things that we do see going around are hepatitis A. That's also a foodborne, mostly, illness caused by someone, not washing their hands properly and handling food and like touching different surfaces. We do see a handful of those cases as well, even here in Ketchikan.
And you can get vaccinated against hepatitis A?
You can. And most adults, are not vaccinated. It's something that started in the later 90s for being vaccinated. So it is recommended for adults to get vaccinated for that as well.
Okay. And is there hepatitis B and C?
There is a hepatitis B vaccine, but there is none for hepatitis C at this time.
Okay. Yeah. But I know it's more and more, it seems like they're testing for that.
For hepatitis C?
C, yeah.
So Southeast Alaska in particular has seen a huge increase in hepatitis C, and that's linked to the opioid crisis. Mm-hmm. Last year, the hepatitis C rate went up to like 500%, and that's mostly because we're seeing more IV drug users, and that's the main way you get hepatitis C is using a dirty needle.
Hmm. Yes. Interesting. Okay. Because mm-hmm. I do see that, I believe at the health fair, that's an option to be tested for that.
Yeah.
And I know I've been hearing that it's recommended that people get tested for that.
Yes. And especially if you're part of that baby boomer generation and you've never had a test for hepatitis C, it is recommended to have that test at least once. And that's because hepatitis C came out was discovered during that late 1960s, 1970s. So before that, when you were having like a blood transfusion or a major surgery, something like that, it wasn't being screened for because they didn't know about it.
Okay.
So you could have gotten it that way.
Makes sense. Yeah. Okay. And we, if you wish, if you have questions out there, you can give us a call at 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. Jennifer will do her best to answer any questions that you have. Again, going back to vaccinations, are there things people should be getting their children vaccinated for, as well as maybe things adults should get vaccinated for, things that we don't necessarily think about. I'm thinking to myself, I believe you're supposed to get like a tetanus shot every X number of years and things like that. But are there things out there that people maybe need to keep in mind and get either tested for or vaccinated against?
Yeah, so adult vaccines are really important, and a lot of times they are kind of put on the back burner, so adults don't really think about it. The tetanus shot is called the Tdap, and it protects more for tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis. You are supposed to get that every 10 years. That is not something that you get once and you're good for life. The same with the pneumonia vaccine. When you get to the age of 60, you're supposed to have two different pneumonia vaccines. And those are just two different ones, and you're good for life. And then they also have a vaccine for shingles. And that one actually just came, a new one just came out on the market called Shingrix. And it is more effective than the previous one. It was 50% with the Zoster vaccine, and now we're seeing a 90%. Effectiveness. And if anyone has ever had shingles, they know that they don't want to get that. It's very painful. And that's caused by the varicella virus, so the chickenpox virus. So when you were exposed to it as a child, it comes out later in life when you're sick or you're immunocompromised or something like that.
Yeah. So it's related again to chickenpox?
Yes, it's the same virus.
And so if you had chickenpox as a kid, you can get shingles. If you've never had chickenpox, will you get both? what might happen?
So if you've never had chickenpox, you cannot get shingles. You can get the chickenpox. But if you've had chickenpox as a child, you are at risk for getting shingles later on in life. So the varicella virus lives inside of your nerve cells, and it never goes away. I don't know if you've ever heard that. If you get exposed to a virus, it's always kind of there. Your body recognizes it. So it lives in your nerve cells. It comes out when it has a chance to. So when you're sick, when you're immunocompromised, when you're stressed out, that's when shingles really tends to come to the surface and cause that rash like blisters, and they do burn and are uncomfortable.
So if you were vaccinated against chickenpox as a kid, would you odds are not have to worry about shingles?
That's correct. Okay. It gives you an immunity. So the varicella vaccine is a live virus, but it is a very weakened virus. So it lives in your nerve cells as well, but it is rarely ever comes to cause actual shingles.
And there's an age, isn't there an age, I guess, minimum age when they normally give you the shingles vaccine?
So now it's 50. You can get it at 50. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Interesting. All right. Any other diseases out there that people should be aware of, or vaccinations that maybe people aren't getting just because they don't think about it?
So we are seeing a lot of the slow schedule vaccine parents, and that is while it's great to get great like immunity at your own pace, it is not recommended by the CDC. We have a very complex schedule in infancy. So from birth to the age of 4, they're studied at a very precise schedule for a reason. They're tested to have the optimum immunity at that age. So when you do the slow vaccine schedule, not only are you not protecting your young infants, but you're also not doing it at recommended by the CDC.
And is it people just want to space it out?
Yes. So a lot of parents that come into the health center are concerned that we're giving too many vaccines at the same time, and that can't be healthy. But the way that I explain that is, you know, the immune system is very complex. You get exposed to things, thousands and thousands of antigens a day, from the environment, from what you take into your food. Vaccines have a very, very small amount of antigen in them, especially like when I was a kid, there were so many more antigens in the vaccines than today. Very small, very safe. It's been tested. And then we give that many vaccines at that small age because those are the children from 0 to 12 months are when you are more likely to have negative outcomes. If you got something like pertussis, you're more likely to have severe health effects at 2 months than you are at 4, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then it's a whole, so you have a lot of infants have a series of vaccinations, yes. But then it continues on, does it not? Or
it does. So you have a you get most of your childhood vaccines from 0 to 12 months, and then you do get boosters at 4. So those boosters at 4 would be your second MMR, your second varicella or chickenpox vaccine, and then your DTaP and your polio vaccines.
And if going to school, isn't it required that you be vaccinated or no?
It is required, yes, and for really good reasons. You get little kids all in the same room, you know, hundreds of kids at a school, and, you know, they're not good about hand hygiene, and they're not good about covering their cough. So you have potential to have lots of children get infected from one person coming in that wasn't vaccinated that brings something like mumps to school.
Okay. So we're talking about, you know, vaccinations, also talking about good hygiene habits that can help keep you from getting sick. Talking about hand washing a lot, what are some other things to keep in mind, I guess, to try to stay away from some of the nasty bugs out there? Are there other things you can do?
So other things that you can do when you're sick, you need to stay home. And then even when you're out in public, if you are sick, you have respiratory illness, making sure you have proper cough etiquette. You don't want to be coughing into your hands and then touching objects. You really want to cough into the crook of your arm, so right into your elbow. The same with sneezing. You don't want to sneeze out into the air. That's putting aerosol right out into the air up to like 50 feet. So your sneeze goes pretty far. So making sure you cover that, staying home when you're sick. And then sanitizing your surfaces, really. Daycare centers should be like cleaning their toys regularly, wiping down your cart before you use them in the grocery store. Those are big things.
Are there also, though, sometimes when people maybe clean too much, because aren't there good germs too?
There are good germs. And we are seeing things like, you know, Lysol and antibacterial soaps have caused a problem for germs. We're seeing things called superbugs. So the problem with germs and bacteria and viruses, they're smart. They mutate and then they evolve to get around your antibacterial stuff. So it isn't necessary to have antibacterial soap in your home. You should just have a regular soap, a hand soap. And it's actually hard to find that nowadays. Everything has microbial, antibacterial, everything. So you don't really need that. It's just really good hand hygiene is soap, water, and friction.
And it seems now there's more awareness of the superbugs and less, say, prescriptions of antibiotics and things.
Yeah. So you hear all the time that I need antibiotics. I have a cold. You can't take antibiotics for colds. It's a virus. There's no cure for the common cold. It's really, you just have to kind of ride it out. We were seeing historically doctors were prescribing lots of antibiotics for lots of respiratory illness in children and even minor ear infections, which we now know that you don't have to be on antibiotics to cure minor ear infections. They'll go away on their own. So your body has a really complex immune system and we should let it work.
And it learns to take care of future issues, I guess, in a sense.
Yes. So your body is good for fighting off infection on its own, and it only needs help when it gets to a certain point.
And what are, is there there's a difference between, say, a cold and a flu, in a sense, but are there differences that are obvious of whether you have a virus or a bacterial infection?
So bacterial infections are going to be more associated with the ear infection, or really the color of your mucus will be different. You'll have a fever. It's really hard to tell at home if you have a bacterial infection. The doctors can test you for flu, and then they can also look for signs of infection like pneumonia in your lungs, ear infections in your ears, things like that.
And at what point, I guess, should you say, I'll just fight it on my own? At what point should you go seek medical help?
So that's really dependent on each person. For the most part, if you have a cold, it should be resolving within a week. If it happens to go more than 10 days, you're starting to get difficulty breathing, you're starting to run high-grade fevers and you're not able to take enough liquids in, those are signs that it's time for you to seek medical attention.
Okay. All right. Lots of good information. Any other thoughts that you had that you wanted to bring up this morning?
So I did want to bring up that we are doing the community immunity immunization contest this summer for kiddos. So we hear a lot of, you know, negative media about vaccines, and to promote really that it's not just about vaccinating your child, it's about protecting the whole community. So it is essential for you to protect your child, but also it helps protect those that cannot be vaccinated, kids that are too young to vaccinate, kids that can't get certain vaccines. So as that, we came up with this contest to promote being fully immunized. So if your child is up to date on their vaccines, they can bring a copy of that record into the public health center. They don't have to have vaccines at the public health center. They just had to have the records to come in and enter and to win four prizes that we will announce at the Blueberry Festival. And the prizes are from Southeast Sea Kayaks, Bering Sea Crab Fisherman Tour, Lighthouse Excursions, and Peace Health was generous and donated the duck tour passes and the movie passes. So come on out and register for that.
Okay. And have you had much response so far?
We have. We have so far. We're hoping that we'll get more at the Blueberry Festival, but we have had great turnout so far.
So you're talking about the Blueberry Festival. Are you going to have a booth or something giving out information and then also signing people up if they bring their vaccine record?
Yeah, so we'll have a booth at the Blueberry Festival. We always do some kind of interactive kid activity, not really related to anything, just fun for the kids. And we do give out vaccine information at that time because it is close to back to school. So we try to promote families to come in before the rush, right, when school starts. So we will have that booth, and we will be giving out information and signing people up for the contest.
Okay, and you were talking about vaccinations being not only for you, but by getting vaccinated, it helps others as well.
It does. It helps protect the whole community. So once that herd immunity gets up to about 80%, you protect your community. So you stop the spread of things like mumps and pertussis and other vaccine-preventable diseases. So you're protecting young infants, older individuals, and also people that can't get vaccines, like immunocompromised, like so people with cancer and autoimmune disorders and things like that.
Okay. All right. I think those are all my questions, unless there's anything else you wanted to add.
No.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jennifer Bergen from the Public Health Department. And again, they are having that community immunization contest. If your child has their vaccinations, you can enter them.